I do apologize. I'm
It's
so
all
used to
fine.
everyone on this show being inept, that, including myself, that I just didn't have a look at what you were sending them. So sorry about that.
Right, that's the opening to the episode right there.
But me apologizing because
Yeah,
that's what we do.
totally out of context too. There's not going to be any context to it at all.
Hey, he's just gonna have that audio clip there to drop in whenever he needs it.
So whenever he says something, I can apologize for it.
Yep.
All right, there you go.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle station.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrett. Plain, simple Garrett.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
It's for sure to become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
It's going to be the Dump on Andy episode.
Oh, Bill, are you sure you can't come?
you need him to deflect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pick on me. With all they've done with Ryan, all they've done, Gene, is just mock me for not actually ending my show. It's all they've done. I thought you said it was finishing. How comes a new episode? And then another new episode. And then another. You said you were ending. Does ending mean something different in Britain?
Yeah, well, you were done with that series.
Yeah.
Now you're on to another series.
There you go. Thank you very much.
You have to remember British terminology here.
That's true. Very true. We ready to roll?
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, and I got the first one, so... Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast in which me and my cohorts are going through every episode of the vastly underrated TV series Star Trek Deep Space Nine and dissecting it and picking it apart and complaining about it and acting like petulant children. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined by my ever-present partner, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
But I don't wanna!
You'll do it and you'll like it. And we are joined today by our good friend, Mr. Gene Hendricks.
Which means no one will be listening to this episode.
Yeah, we won't have anybody email about this one because you're on it.
Well, I can't think of anything else to write about once I've said it all.
That's true.
I can understand. You know what? If you listen back to the episodes, one constant you'll find is that Andy and I have never emailed in.
Well... To email in, you kind of have to listen, so that would only make you possible, Paul.
That is true. We all hate
Andy. I don't listen to myself. Why is this such a big deal for people?
It's not. It's just funny to hear you react to it.
Oh, dear God.
I don't know. Somehow it's insulting that you don't listen. I don't know why. It shouldn't be.
I know, I do get this from Stephen as well. I get the feeling he's slightly incensed I don't listen. Why would you listen to you?
I'm not
would
really
you do
sure,
that for
to
pleasure?
Be totally honest with you. I don't know. But somehow it's insulting that you don't. I don't really have a good reason for why anyone should listen to their own podcast other than quality control before you post it.
Oh, I do that before I post it. I listen to it. But maybe that I'll listen to the ones I edit anyway. And I've been doing it with the Firefly ones. But maybe that's it. Maybe by that point, I've had enough.
You're sick of your own voice at that point.
Yes, at that point, yeah.
Well, see, I listen to shows that I'm on that I don't edit. Because I want to see how much they make me sound like an idiot.
See, I don't worry about that because, you know, I am an idiot. So.
Yeah, but, you know, with me, I just worry about degree at that point.
Well, I've never thought you sound like an idiot on Back to the Bins, Pop.
Oh, you haven't listened then. You don't listen to that either.
I do listen to Bins.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment, but I think that's just that you're my friend.
Yeah, but they don't pay me to say nice things about you.
That is true.
They don't pay me.
They don't pay, and if they did, they don't pay you enough.
These are true facts. Have we got any Star Trek news?
I got nothing either.
The film's gone into turnaround. They're doing some refilming or new filming or pickup shots or whatever. So read into that what you will. It may be good, it may be bad. Last time Star Trek had substantial refilming, wasn't it Generations?
Did they? I don't even remember. Yeah.
I don't remember.
They completely reshot the ending for Generations.
Okay. I mean, that doesn't necessarily... Anytime they have to go back for refilming, it isn't necessarily a death knell for the movie, because there have been plenty of ones where they've done that and it's been fine. But it certainly doesn't fill you with confidence.
Especially now that they're filming where they can see what... They don't have to wait for the end of the day to review the dailies. They can see the shot right as they do it and review it and say, nah, it's not right, let's do it again. You would think they would get everything done now, and then they wouldn't have to go back. The only reason, in my mind, that they're going back is, oh, crap, that doesn't work. We need to change this. But then again, I'm not going to see the movie anyway, so it doesn't matter.
You're taking the Batman versus Superman approach with that one as well.
Yes.
Very sensible.
I figure, why risk my blood pressure?
Well, you know what? I do go with the theory, and I know Andy has expressed this in a different way, but I go to the movies to enjoy myself. And it's, you know, it's come up, and I guess when you've expressed it, Andy, it's come up when you've criticized a movie on a show, or if you've given a review that wasn't all that in-depth, because you're sitting there, you're enjoying the movie, you're not planning a podcast out. You go to the movies to enjoy the movie.
I've paid my money to enjoy that film. I'm not going to pay money to go and watch something I'm not looking for to enjoy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And I'm not going to. And I'm not going to go with the attitude that this is my job and I can't enjoy it because I have to take notes for a podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but I do go with the intention of enjoying it. So if I'm fairly confident I'm not going to enjoy it, then I'm fairly confident that I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
Especially with the price of movies nowadays.
I've not watched any of the new Trek movies in the cinema because none of them gave me that Trek vibe. So I don't see how this one's going to be different unless I hear remarkable reviews about it. I suspect that this will be a wait for Netflix or whatever as well.
Well, when it does come out, I will be seeing it. And I'll let you know. I'll let you know what I think of it at least, whether or not you can trust that opinion. Remains to be seen, but I will tell you what I think.
You're normally quite open-minded about things.
I you know, it's funny because we do those roundtable episodes, and for some reason I've fallen into the reputation where they call me Dr. No, like as if I don't like anything.
No, I don't think that's true.
And if anything, I think I'm overly receptive to movies that I should be more critical of.
I think you've given higher ratings to episodes of this show than I think we have.
I think the whole Dr. No thing comes from the fact that I was not a huge fan of Pacific Rim, whereas everybody else on the episode really liked it a lot.
See, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, that was my review of it.
Michael loved that movie. So I do wonder, maybe there's a generation thing, though. But then again, everyone else who will have been on that episode with you will be around our age, won't they? So maybe that's...
I think I was the oldest on the episode, but also you're also dealing like Luke Giaconetti was on there, who you're hard pressed to find a bigger fan of large monster movies.
Yeah.
He's just got more of an inclination, I think, to like a movie because it's got large monsters and a big budget.
And it's right in his wheelhouse of what he's a fan of as well.
Yeah. So, and then the other one that I was down on that everybody else seemed to enjoy was the recent Godzilla.
Right.
Which I found to be boring. Were you on that one with us, Gene?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I thought it was boring.
Well, but again, it's the same thing. I grew up loving Godzilla movies, so I'm predisposed to like that, and then they throw me all these, hey, we got atomic breath, and hey, look, he's doing the neck stomp, and you know, all these classic Godzilla things, where if you're not a fan of those movies, you're not gonna, you know, stand up and cheer with it. So I'm predisposed to like it.
I think if I remember right, and it's been a while, but I think a lot of my criticism was, if you're gonna give me a Godzilla movie, I prefer to have a little bit more Godzilla in it.
Except if you watch any Godzilla movie, there isn't a huge amount of Godzilla in them.
Yeah, well, and maybe that's why I'm not a huge fan. I'm a fan of the character. I'm not a fan of the movies.
Okay. Hey, perfectly understandable.
I am a little optimistic, though. The talk is that they're going to do a King Kong Godzilla movie now. So
yeah,
finally take that old movie and give it a big budget and see what they could put together.
Yeah, except if they're going to do it properly, then you're going to have Kong, who is, let's be optimistic, 50 feet tall. Yeah. And Godzilla, 300 feet tall. So Kong becomes Toe Jam.
We need a smaller we need a smaller Godzilla.
Start the online petition.
Beating the crap out of his ankle.
So you're already critical of the movie that they probably haven't even finished writing a script of yet.
I'm critical of the original.
Well, the original is camp fun.
Yeah, but again, they make them the same size.
Yeah.
And they give Kong lightning powers.
Well, the lightning strengthens him, right? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah. So Kong is electric.
Cue Oasis song. Kong's electric. About five people in the audience got that.
Yeah, and I'm not one of them.
Neither am I.
Oh, you two don't listen to enough contemporary music.
If you mean contemporary music that was made between 1960 and 1990, then you're wrong.
No, this is post-1990.
And therein lies your problem.
Okay, should we do the Bible then, if we've got no other news?
All right, if we must. I really enjoy just...
You're dragging it back to Trek, aren't you?
Well, yeah, otherwise we'll just natter all day, and then the episode will consist of, yeah, it was a good one, this.
All right, well, today we're doing a Quark episode, so it's fitting that the next entry in the Bible is Quark, the Ferengi bartender. The Ferengi race has been a part of STTNG since the very beginning. They are ugly, sexist, greedy little aliens who are interested only in profit and getting their hands on anything of yours they happen to fancy. Quark runs many of the entertainment concessions on DS9, including the bar, restaurant, gambling house, and the hollow suites upstairs, where your every fantasy can be played out. He spends most of his time behind the bar. If there is some scam being run in the sector, it often involves him. But beyond the malevolence, he is a charming host, in the Ferengi sort of way, and forges an interesting relationship with Sisko. They actually enjoy sparring together, and now and then the Ferengi lends a hand to solve a problem for the commander, as long as there's something in it for him. His effete sexist attitudes make Kira an obvious adversary. He is consumed with passion for Dax. All right, we have a character here who I think they varied off the Bible a bit here.
Yeah.
Because instead of Sisko, it's Odo that he parries with. And while they've paid some lip service to the attraction to Dax, he hasn't been consumed in it at all.
No, well, they went down that route with Bashir, so they probably thought to do it with two characters was probably a little bit silly.
I think the initial thought might be, well, everyone loves Dax.
Yeah.
Because she's just so sexy and blah, 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 so everyone has to be in love with her. And I don't know that that's wrong, but, you know, it doesn't make for it and as entertaining of a TV show, I don't believe. Then you start having WKRP and everybody's in love with Lonnie Anderson, who I didn't think was anywhere near as sexy as they tried to make her out to be.
I have to wonder how much Armin Shimerman had input, how much he had into this, because it seems like he molded the character a little more once he got in there. And so they basically took, they make Quark Ferengi number 4 from the original Star Trek episode, and he turned him into Rick from Casablanca.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and he's got far more depth than they could have written him as. I think they've had a couple of missteps, and we've seen a little bit of that along the way. Mm. But I think overall, I think you're right, Gene. I think Armin Shimerman has had a lot to do with the development and the depth of the character and giving them the basis to want to do more with him instead of having him just be a background character.
Right.
The Deep Space Nine production crew seemed to give the actors a lot more leeway than the Next Generation production crew did. Because they've all talked about, certainly, Udo, what's his name? Renaud Bourgeois. He talked about having meetings with the writers as well. And so was Armin Shimerman, so...
I think that's why I think it's one of the reasons why DS9 has had the quality that I believe it has. Because they allowed the actors to remove themselves from formulaic and to give each of their individual characters a more three-dimensional feel to them than just being, okay, you know, this is your role, end of story.
I wonder how much that has to do with the fact that DS9 was never the flagship show. You know, because it was... Next Gen was still on when the first seasons were going on, and then attention shifted over to Voyager. So DS9 was never on the forefront, so I think they were allowed a little more leeway with what they were doing.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Because Deep Space Nine was always the show that was willing to push the boundaries anyway, wasn't it? And I think it got away with that because it was the middle child. Because all attention was on Next Gen finishing, and then all attention was on Voyager launching. Deep Space Nine was just kind of over in the background doing its own thing, and I think that's why it's a better show than either of those.
And I also think when you say Voyager launching, by the time that TNG went off, the focus was on the TNG movies.
Right.
I think TNG was able to survive in an era of TOS movies because they took place in a different era and all. So you could have them both basically coexist and be the focus. Whereas when TNG started making movies, when TNG existed, obviously, it was the flagship. And then when it started making movies, I think it remained the flagship, even though they weren't coming out regularly, if that makes sense. Or not.
No, it does.
It does. Yeah. I can't argue with it. That's why I'm being quiet.
Oh, argue. Come on. Ed,
you're wrong, damn it.
I'm rolling up my sleeves. I'm ready for a battle.
Well, you're not going to get one. We're all too nice.
That sucks.
I will fight you for your lands and title, for you are but a woman.
A freak accident becomes Quark's golden opportunity.
His knife was at my throat.
I
plunged it into his chest.
But when the soldier's family vows revenge.
You killed my brother.
Quark must marry the widow.
It is done.
What's done?
Is it a wedding worth dying for?
Ready.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
So, today's episode is The House of Quark, Season 3, Episode Number 3. Directed by Les Landau, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, story by Tom Benko, and our guest stars in the episode are Max Grodnczyk as Rom, Mary Kay Adams as Grilka, Robert O'Reilly as Gowron. We'll return to the Gowron thing there. Rosalind Chow as Keiko, Carlos Carrasco as Degor, and Joseph Ruskin as Tumek. And the story goes something like... Actually, I forgot to mention, its original air date was October 10th, 1994. Quark's bar is receiving very little business, and indeed the only customer in the bar is a Klingon named Kozak. Kozak has run out of money and wants to start a line of credit at the bar. Quark accepts, but the Klingon is too drunk to understand and pulls his knife on Quark. After a short struggle, Kozak dies by his own blade. Quark sees it as a business opportunity and gets a great deal of notoriety from describing Kozak's supposedly heroic death, particularly from Dagor, a Klingon who claims to be Kozak's brother. Dagor asks how Kozak died. Quark attempts to explain that it was an accident, but Dagor clearly wants to hear otherwise. So Quark lies to Dagor, claiming Kozak died in battle. After Kozak's widow, Grilka, arrives, she has Quark knocked out and taken back to Quonos, the Klingon homeworld. Since women are normally forbidden from leading a Klingon house, Quark is forced to marry Grilka, allowing her to protect her property long enough for Gowron to let her inherit it due to extenuating circumstances. If Quark really had killed Kozak in honorable combat, Grilka would have lost all claim to her house. Quark has to confront Grilka's enemies, leading the temporary House of Quark, instead of fighting Dagor, who is not Kozak's brother after all. Quark checks the house's books, which prove that Dagor has taken money from Grilka's house for years. However, trying to prove it before the High Council only leads to Dagor claiming Quark's accusations dishonor him, and leading Gowron to call for a duel of honor. When time comes for battle, Quark tosses aside his weapon and mocks Dagor's efforts, noting that if Dagor goes ahead with a battle, which Quark obviously can't win, and claims all of Grilka's property, it will be over the body of an unarmed Ferengi. When Dagor happily agrees and tries to kill Quark anyway, he reveals his greed and dishonor to the Council, and Gowron discommendates and banishes him while commending the Ferengi for his bravery. Realizing the unusual circumstances underlying the matter, Gowron agrees to let Grilka become head of her house. Grilka is grateful to Quark for his efforts, and he asks for a divorce, which he happily grants in customary Klingon fashion. So, after coming off the search, which was a big-time world-building story over two episodes, we go back to a Quark episode, but not your typical Quark episode, kind of, you know, Stranger in a Strange Land episode. And I found it to be entertaining, not particularly groundbreaking, but just kind of fun and enjoyable to watch. What did you think?
I loved it.
I
loved this one. Yeah, I was genuinely entertained by it. There's a number of shows that we've done when we've been watching Deep Space Nine that have seen much longer than 45 minutes. This one whizzed by. It proved that Armin Shimerman can carry a show on his own. I love all the Klingon culture stuff because that was carried on over from Deep Space, from Next Generation. And Ron Moore wrote it, so a lot of it made sense. There was a lot of really nice little continuity bits that were really pleasing, like the way they beam up is exactly the same language that they say in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, which was a nice little geeky note for people like us. I was genuinely entertained by this one. And Quark actually learns a lesson in it. There are more important things than money. The respect of his brother. And it's genuinely good episode.
Yeah, it was it was enjoyable. I think, you know, you I don't know if I go to love, but I definitely enjoyed it.
I was actually pleasantly surprised because I haven't seen most of these episodes in at least 10 years. And I'm rewatching them for this show. So when I got to it, you know, just the title, The House of Quark, I'm like, isn't this the one that's basically the Negus with Klingons? But it isn't. It's actually a lot more in-depth, especially with the Klingon politics, which you don't get a lot of on Next Gen because Worf is so far removed from it. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I really, really enjoyed this one. And also the stuff with O'Brien and Keiko was a nice B plot because yeah. It was, you know, it's actual married couple stuff, and you know it's serious when he's getting relationship advice from Bashir.
Yeah, and it's good advice.
Is this really Bashir? I mean, did they give somebody else's lines to the character? What's going on?
did it seem like Generations to you with where they had other people reading Spock and McCoy's lines?
Yeah, it was kind of like that. Why is Chekhov going to the sick bay? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's well. I mean, the scene when Scotty says, you know, I'm trying to remember. He says something to the captain about them, you know, the fact that he's not captaining the ship, and it seemed like Spock should be saying it.
Right.
And then you have Chekhov saying, "Oh, you're old nurses." No, that's Dr. McCoy saying that. That's not Chekhov.
No.
But
yeah, but for, you know, the limited amount of time Bashir was in this episode, he had something to do, at least.
Yeah, and it speaks more, it speaks less of Bashir's knowledge of relationships and more of the frustration that you feel when you can't kind of connect with your spouse for whatever you know, on whatever issue is coming up. And you're willing to take advice from anyone, even the guy who, you know, can't hold on to a relationship at all.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, some of that does ring true, and the summary really didn't get into the B plot at all. But, yeah, I mean, overall, I don't have a lot to say about this one. I just found it to be generally enjoyable. I didn't feel it was groundbreaking. I didn't feel it was world-building. It was just fun.
Yeah, and after the big expansive Search 2-parter, they were asked to do a couple of episodes that were low on budget, and they already had the Klingon haul from Next Generation. I can't imagine doing that many Klingons was necessarily cheap, because all that makeup must cost money. But it was a really good script, and it's really well acted. And there is some underlining learning from the characters done, which is very rare in serialized television. As a rule, at this point, they stayed the same from the beginning to the end. Deep Space Nine is one of the first shows where the characters evolved, and the people that they are in Season 7 is not the people that they were in Season 1.
Yes, I agree with that. And yeah, I mean, you do have some Quark character building in here. And I always enjoy episodes. When they do the Klingon episodes, I enjoy the character of Gowron. I think he's, you know, he does have some dimension to him. And you know, later on, he'll be... if things will develop with him, which I kind of didn't agree with, because I don't want to get into what's going to happen to him, but I always thought through TNG and early on in DS9 that he was an honorable character and an honorable leader. And later on, I'm not so sure that that's the way he's portrayed. Just leave it at that.
Yeah. In this, he's also practical. You know, he's not just honorable, he's practical, because he realizes... Okay, this is all going on. This makes more sense. You know, it's not just the honor thing where, you know, Quark's about to be executed and Gowron goes in and stops it. But they, you know, building on the whole ledger, you know, if you look in column J, subsection whatever, which bored everybody, you know, the Klingons and the audience to tears. Gowron realizes that there is more going on here. He couldn't do anything about it before because that's not the way the government's set up. But as soon as he got an opening, it's like, okay, you're out. You can lead your house. Get this big-eared freak out of here.
Yeah, I like that Gowron is open to the fact that sometimes the Klingon way may not necessarily be the best way to solve the problem, but his hands are tied by the political situation that he's in. I gotta be honest, I did genuinely find that scene funny, where Quark was going through the spreadsheets with him, and Gowron just looks at it and just tosses it off to one side, like, I don't care about any of this shit.
I wish I had a lot more to say about this one.
Well, all right, the only thing that your synopsis really missed is at the very beginning, and it's nitpicky, he isn't the only one in the bar. Morn is there, which gives us the great rule of acquisition. When Morn leaves, it's over. And yes. Rom looks at him and goes, that's not a rule of acquisition. And Quark goes, it is now. So, and I love Morn when he leaves as well, and he winks at him because he's like, hey, I'm getting some tonight.
And he's giving him the thumbs up as he's walking out.
Which is brilliant.
I always get the fact that Morn is considered to be a ladies' man.
Yeah, and that's a brilliant scene, and it just sets the tone for the rest of the episode, which is by and large a comedy episode, but it's a genuinely entertaining and funny one. And the Klingon, what's the name of the Klingon woman? I've forgotten it.
Grover.
Yes, that's it. Thank you very much. She's really good in this.
Oh,
at playing the male Klingons at their own game to get what she wants. So there's some nice gender politics in this episode as well, that we've not seen a lot of Klingon women in the show at this point. We'll see more of them with Beata and Losa in Generations, and we've seen a bit of them in Next Gen. But the idea that in the Klingon society the women are considered second-class citizens, here Gowron is slowly changing that.
Well, they're also considered second-class citizens in Ferengi culture.
Yes, they are.
Well, actually, they're not even considered citizens in Ferengi culture.
Yeah, that's
true.
It's
their property.
Yes.
But this episode did lead me to a question about Lursa and Beator. Because ever since Doras is killed in what I would assume was honorable combat with Worf.
Yeah.
Was it honorable, or was he? Was Worf's end of it honorable, but Duras is dishonorable?
That's what leads me to the question of, since Lursa and Beator are leading the House of Doras, did they get special
dispensation?
Dispensation. I was thinking discommendation and dispensation at the same time. Did they get special dispensation to lead their house because?
Because he did it dishonorably. He died without honor, and I think that makes sense. I'm trying to remember the episode when Doras was killed, and while I vaguely remember it, I can't remember all the details.
Actually, no, I am misremembering it. Doras did not die in combat. Worf came in with a batleth and basically surprised him. He claimed, because that was when... I can't remember her name.
Well,
Kaelor?
You're talking about Worf's wife?
Oh, Kaelor.
Kaelor.
So you were close.
Yeah, when she was killed, Worf came in, she was my mate. And, you know, that's his reasoning behind it. But if you look at all we see is Worf knocked Duras down, Riker come in and say, Worf, no! And then Worf does the fancy thing and hits Duras in the neck. So I don't even think Duras was armed. So it's possible that because of that, that's why Lursa and Beator are leading the House of Doras.
And effectively, it's a retcon that now they're giving you the rule as to why they could.
Right.
But it does have consistency to it as long as Doras' death is considered dishonorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which does seem kind of stupid, actually.
A lot of Klingon society seems kind of stupid.
Yeah. But if you die without honor, then your family gets to keep your property. If you die with honor, we're taking everything and not letting you provide for your family.
Well, it's a protection thing. Because, like, in this case, the guy was drunk, tripped, and killed himself. It was an accident. So he can't give his property to somebody else. But if he died in honorable combat, meaning he's on equal footing, he went into it knowingly, then to the victor go the spoils.
But then, you know, based on that thought, okay, I have two children here.
Mm.
And if that was the law here, not only would I shy away from all combat because I'm a big chicken, but I would also shy away from all combat because then I will never die honorably, and at least if I do die, I know my children get my property. So,
I'm not saying that it's a logical way to go about things. We're also talking about a military where you get a promotion by killing your superior officer.
Isn't that the way it is here? I thought, maybe I'm wrong.
Are those helicopters I hear over your house, Paul?
The NSA are coming as we speak.
That's how I've gotten my promotions.
Yeah, but you're a lawyer, so there's a lot of similarities there with Klingons.
More lack of honor, you mean?
No, I would never say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it. I guess ultimately what you come down to is a lot of other cultures don't make sense when you lay them out and you think about them. They don't make sense to the people on the outside looking in, but for whatever reason, to the people inside, they look fine.
Yeah.
So we could always chalk it up to that.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, another thing I was thinking about is if you look at, you know, via a worldview, I'm about to get very heavy here, so I apologize. But one of the things that if you look at from a typical Western European American worldview is the main thing is the individual. Yeah, everything is about this person and the family. Yeah, the family's there, but the individual is the most important thing. If you look at it from an... I'll just use the generic term heathen, even though that is specific to my worldview. The smallest unit is the family. And that's the way the Klingons are treating it. Whereas, you know, anything, if you... from the supposed brother's statement is if the one, the head of the house dishonored himself, then the whole house is dishonored because it's one unit. They're looking at the house of Moog, the house of Duras, all these houses are one thing with components inside. So I actually found it interesting going at it from that perspective that a Klingon house is an individual. It's like best comparison I can make is it's a corporation. A corporation in legally is a person, but it's got all these components inside it. So if the corporation Enron dishonors itself, the dishonor carries to the people inside it. And Paul's about to cut out all of this.
But if you dishonor yourself, and the dishonor carries on to your family, which is the Klingon way, because when it was thought that Worf's father died dishonorably, the family was to be dishonored. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't it make more sense that if you dishonored yourself, now your property is forfeit? Then you dishonor yourself so your family gets to keep it? You know what I mean? It's just from a logical point of view, you'd think you'd be rewarded for honor and punished for dishonor, and it's almost like their way is the exact opposite of that.
Well, the only reason that it's not working here is because it would be if there was a male heir, this problem wouldn't exist. That's the whole key, that this guy died without a male heir, and it's primogeniture, you know, etc.
But now, if he had a male heir and he died honorably, wouldn't his property still pass to the person who killed him with honor?
No, because it would go to the male heir. The only reason it was going to the victor here would be because there was no one to inherit it. Because that's the way these houses are working.
But in the house of Lursa and Betor,
right?
The house of Duras. Wasn't there some little punk kid that they came up with to say, oh, no, here's the heir?
Yeah, there was.
Yeah, that was... But that was, like... That wasn't immediate. I think because Lursa and Betor came back before that kid was around.
It wasn't that... God. I'm trying to even remember where that was. Was that not the Redemption 2-part, or was it not that far back?
I'm trying to remember. I can't... I mean, I remember the overall storyline, but I can't remember the specifics as to, you know, what occurred when, the chronology of it.
Yeah, but I don't think he was Duras's son. I think he was like a cousin or something that they had to maneuver politically to say, oh yeah, he's the heir now.
I just remember that kid and thinking that kid needs a good bat lith in the head.
Well, I don't think he lasted long.
Was he killed off, or was he just kind of like sent away and you never saw him again?
I think he was just shuttled to the side because they realized that the boob window is more important.
And I can't argue with that.
Yeah, from an aesthetic point of view, it makes
from the neck down, boob window is a wonderful thing.
oh
Okay. As long as you eliminate that Lursa and Betor face.
But that's the whole point of the boob window, so you don't look at their face.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more the teeth that you want to get rid of, I think.
Yeah. I have to say...
I could do without the forehead ridges, too.
Yeah, you never know.
Although Grilka wasn't that bad in this episode.
I think about was it the Day of the Dove?
Yes.
And in that one, Chekhov all of a sudden starts being a little amorous towards the Klingon woman.
You're putting it very nicely.
Yes.
The Klingon woman in that one was played by Thingyo from Dallas. So.
Who is that?
I can't remember her name. I know she went on to be in Dallas.
Now I'll need to look.
Well, while you're looking, I liked as well the Keiko and O'Brien subplot, because Keiko was kind of just shoehorned into being a schoolmistress, which isn't what she was. So it seems quite odd that it would be Bashir who gives him the sensible advice, but this is where we start down the road to Bashir and O'Brien being good friends. Because at the moment, they're still quite antagonistic.
Because they're friendly, but they're not friends yet. And this, O'Brien actually makes the first move. Mainly, like you said before, he's at the end of his rope. He will ask anyone for advice.
Yeah.
And so he goes to Bashir, and it works out. Now, the question I have is, was Rosalind Chow going in doing a movie or something? I mean, why did they have to get her out of the way?
I think it says in the companion that it's O'Brien called Meany who's off doing a movie, so they wanted to explain why Keiko wasn't around as well.
Oh,
because they can write around O'Brien by just giving him very few scenes, because Cole Meany's done quite a lot of films in and around Deep Space Nine, because that was one of the reasons for accepting the role. He said, as long as I'm free to go off and do these little Irish independent movies, which I really want to do, and Rick Berman apparently had it written into his contract that he could go off and do these, and they would write around that. So they didn't want to have O'Brien only in a little bit and then have to service Keiko as well. Although O'Brien does a lot of service in a Keiko in this episode. So they got rid of it. They just sent her to... Because Bajor, as they say, Bajor's not that far away.
Yeah, it's a three hours by runabout.
Yeah, so it's not like they can't just bring her back or have O'Brien drop by whenever they want to. So I thought it was quite a good solution, because the school plot didn't really go anywhere, did it?
It worked with Vedic Wynn, and that was about it.
Yeah, and that was, again, it was a nice way of tying it in to what they'd already established, which is what Deep Space Nine was really good at. But as a rule, it was just like... The problem Deep Space Nine has, in addition to having its core cast, you've got all of the subsidiaries. And one of the things that they did ultimately make a strength of was the fact that because they didn't go anywhere, all these characters could keep coming back. But this show ultimately ends up with a massive cast of characters because of that. And maybe they were just struggling to do anything interesting with Keiko. And maybe Rosalind Chow was like, look, if I'm just going to be making Miles dinner and teaching kids, I could be doing other shows.
True.
Fair enough. I'm going to veer us off topic again and go back to Day of the Dove. The actress was named Susan Howard.
How was that?
Better known... Her name is actually Jerry Lynn Mooney, better known as Susan Howard. I guess that's her stage name. She's an American actress, writer, and political activist. She is known for portraying the character Donna Culver Krebs, on the primetime soap opera Dallas, and as a co-star on the series Petrocelli. But then if you go down, it mentions she had appeared on The Flying Nun, I Dream of Jeannie, Star Trek, on which she carried the distinction of playing the first female Klingon on the original series, and the only one ever to speak. And with that, when we start talking about attractive women, Klingon women, I think it's time to add Dr. Bill Robinson to the call.
Good segue.
Yes.
Dr. Hello? Bill.
Yes.
What do you think about pretty Klingon women?
Is that it? If Bill went away now, that could be his contribution to the show. Just coming in to go,
They're very...
I think that maybe you owe Dr. Bill Kinnaird to the show, because did you watch this episode, Bill?
No, I didn't watch anything. I haven't had any internet for 24 hours.
Not sure what happens when you lose the internet for 24 hours, but I think it could be fatal.
All right, okay. Well, we'll grade this one, and Bill can just make one up.
Oh, Bill can stay with us for the email and stuff, too. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I was going to try to do a... tell me how this sounds. This is Dr. Bill. Can you guys hear me? There was a strange transporter accident. I think I'm out at Deep Space 69. Not sure when I can get back to the show, guys. But I'll try.
Sounds like you're in a rainstorm.
I was crumbling a plastic bag in front of me.
I figured it was something like that, but it sounded like a rainstorm. See, you're like a Foley artist.
Yeah, that's me.
I want to know what happens on Deep Space 69. Or is it a case of what happens on Deep Space 69 stays on Deep Space 69?
That's where all the pretty Klingon women are in the dark.
Everybody from Deep Space 69 don't bother to go to Risa, the pleasure planet.
It's an orbit of Risa.
Oh, yes, all Klingon women are pretty in the dark.
Or the plastic bag.
Yeah, a plastic bag. Yeah, that's rough Klingon.
Oh, before we get to our ratings, we should do what would Blaine say?
Oh, yes.
So, Blaine sent in, "Hi all, a Ferengi episode. This seems to be habit forming. Following or preceding significant, dramatically heavy episodes with lighter Ferengi episodes to compensate for the emotional responses of the viewers. Hidden within the fun interactions, we see that Quark is actually a very good businessman and that there is room for such individuals in the Star Trek universe. It's also nice to have characters like Gowron show up and remind us that TNG and DS9 are actually part of the same universe." Blaine.
Very good. Yeah, well, they'll start robbing a lot more characters from Next Generation now, because Voyager can't.
Right.
Although yeah. Voyager does shoehorn in Dwight Schultz at some point, don't they?
I was going to say, although they will.
And Marina Sirtis is one, isn't she?
Yeah, she does manage to appear, and she and Riker even appear on Enterprise.
Yeah, that's the last episode of Enterprise. People don't talk about that, though, do they?
No, not really.
Well, they had
because
the
that
stuff.
Was so. I mean, I know we're going far afield here, but that was so like forced. Like we have to end the show, so let's come up with a final episode.
And but, actually, it was a way to appeal to people like me who didn't like Enterprise in saying, you know, this was all just a holodeck recreation. Don't believe any of it.
Is that essentially what it does?
Yeah, because at the end of it, Riker basically says "end program."
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I actually hate
a lot of Enterprise. I watched the first couple of episodes and thought, I don't think this is for me. And then in the fourth season, I watched the Mirror Mirror one, which is genuinely good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
And the only thing I was going to say is the reason I didn't watch Enterprise up until the fourth season was three words: temporal cold war. Such a stupid friggin' concept.
Yeah, I wasn't big on that, but I actually liked the Zindi season. Or the Zindi arc, but I heard from more than one person when they did their Dark Mirror episode that wouldn't you love to see an entire series of this?
Yes. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. the thing with that episode is it just puts lie to the idea that the original series stuff looks dated, because it looked much better than what we saw on a weekly schedule, and Bakula wore the hell out of that green wraparound tunic Shatner used to wear. And I think my big disappointment with Enterprise was it wasn't that. I wanted the cage. That's what I wanted it to be, the prequel. I'd have accepted Robert April.
Right.
I wanted it to be that, and it wasn't. And I know it's not fair to judge it on what it wasn't, but I never got over that. I never got over that I wanted this to be Kirk's Enterprise, but with the captains that came before him. Because you could have done 5-year mission with Robert April and then brought Christopher Pike in for the last two seasons. And I think that would have been brilliant. But they didn't. Yeah. The only reason they didn't was because they wouldn't have got the money for creating new characters. Because originally, to breasts was supposed to be
she was supposed to be to pow.
They got told that if they did that, Theodore Sturgeon's estate would get the money, and because they're both greedy bastards, Brandon Braga and Rick Berman, they changed the character so they got the money.
Best.
And I honestly believe that is the only reason that that show wasn't a proper prequel.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I still enjoyed the stories that they did, but I would have liked for it to have had more roots in the original series history.
I would have preferred they just didn't contradict original series history.
And that's, yes, I can't argue with you on that. I want to argue with you, but I can't.
Well, there was
because I will lose, and I don't like losing.
There was an oversized Star Trek back in the, well, for a very long time, and Gene can probably attest to this, was putting out like oversized novels. I think Enterprise was called one, Final Frontier, and I think the Final Frontier one dealt with Robert April as the captain of the Enterprise.
Right.
But it's been so long since I read that, I don't have any details at the top of my head.
I don't remember. I am not Scott Rifen, so I did not get every single Star Trek Expanded Universe novel. I only got a couple of them, so I couldn't tell you if Robert April was in any of them.
Yeah, it's a...
He probably was. You know what they were like for mine in canon. I only remember Robert April actually being in that animated series episode.
Yes, which was actually really good.
Yeah, the counterclock instance, really good episode.
Oh, that's right. That's where they were all getting younger?
They were getting younger.
Right, and he was already old, so...
He aged... He digressed back to being his age as a captain, and Spock, who was has such a long lifespan, was young, but he wasn't a kid, so he was able to help. Mm-hmm. I love the animated series.
Yeah, there's some good stuff there.
There is. It doesn't deserve the bad rep it has. Story-wise, some of it's really good.
Most of the reports you read on it are that the stories are solid.
Yeah,
I don't think the reputation is as bad as you're saying.
No, it has been reevaluated. When I was growing up in the 80s, it was the one that you never got to see.
Well, yeah.
And the one that everyone dissed on. But I always figured that came out on DVD, it's been reevaluated quite a lot.
Yeah, I always figured you didn't see it because of whatever kind of licensing issues existed. I never thought it was because, oh, this is bad.
See, I remember seeing it a lot. I remember seeing it more than the original series. It was on. It was one of the staples of early Nickelodeon.
Okay, see, and that early Nickelodeon is before they had cable in the neighborhood I lived in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that was one of Nickelodeon. We didn't have it where I grew up, but my grandparents did up in Fanwood. Because they were, like, spitting distance from New York. So they got.
Well, I lived in New York, and I couldn't get it.
But they had cable, is what I'm saying. And it was available there, and it was it's the only place I ever remember seeing you can't do this you can't do that on television, which is an excellent show. Yes, I mean, any show that has a restaurant proprietor named Barf, you have to like.
You know what we should do?
What?
We should rate this episode.
Yeah,
because we're
dragging
really
it back to Star Trek again. What's wrong with you?
We're really going far afield here.
We are. And, the next one's going to be really short because I kind of have to bail for about one-ish.
All right, so let's get the rating done and.
There's a man that since I haven't had any internet for 24, so a man built a robot in the likeness of Scarlett Johansson. I'm sure that's strictly for scientific reasons.
Yeah.
Anyway,
think of that what you will, dear listeners.
Now you know what kind of websites Bill goes to as soon as he gets internet back.
I'm on Facebook!
Sure you are, Bill.
Gotta get my
Bill's
man.
Looking for a YouTube instructional video on how to build a Scarlett Johansson robot. Anyway, House of Quark. As I've said, I found this to be entertaining. I thought that Armin Shimerman stood out, that he really did well in it. It was character building. I didn't really think so much world building, but you do have the callback to the Klingons and at least a little bit of familiarity there. And overall, it was just fun to watch. I don't think I'm quite as high on it as Andy, but I really enjoyed it. And I'm going to say a 3.5.
I'm going to go 4 just because of how much I enjoyed watching it. I really did love this one in the process of watching and enjoying it. It never became... Some of them are a bit long, even though they're only 45 minutes. We'll get to that in the next episode. But this one, first sailed by, it was well written, it was well acted, the funny bits were funny, the dramatic bits were dramatic, and it adds something to the Klingon culture. I liked it a lot, so I'm going 4.
Yeah, like I said before, I was pleasantly surprised when I watched this, because my memory of it... I have no idea why I thought it wasn't this episode. I thought it was more comedy, but this was really good character-wise. And I gave it a 4 as well.
Well, due to the lovely April Fool's changeover from Frontier Communications, I didn't get to watch anything like I had planned to. And from what I remember of this from when I watched it the first time, I thought, because I just glanced at a plot summary, I actually thought maybe that Ursa and I thought this was going to have them in it, and yeah, I was wrong. So I'm going to go with a 0 since I, for an incomplete.
Yeah, there you go, incomplete.
I'm going to go with incomplete for my
go rated an I.
Rating. That's me screwing up that rating system every time.
So this time you're not going to screw it up because I'm not actually writing that down.
Ha! Maybe I'll have it for next time. Oh wait, no, I won't have it then either.
Well, I think that's your cue, Andy, to step in here and tell us what we're doing
next time. An all new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Don't lose your equilibrium.
All right, we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Bye.
See ya.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.